Thank you very much, everybody. I'd like to start by thanking the ministers and their representatives for the invitation to speak to you today, as well as the conference organisers. Tom and Teresa first started talking to the agency group regarding the possibility for a SCOTENS event focusing on teacher education for inclusion. The beginning of the year, this year, and Verity and I were extremely pleased about this initiative because it's very rare within the European context that people are devoting entire debates and conference foci to this issue. It's very much a small side issue which is sometimes debated, but it's quite rare that people see this as a priority for an entire conference. So we are extremely pleased to be part of that, and we'd like to thank you for involving us in your discussions. Following on from Renato's solo performance of virtuoso proportions, I'd say. You have a little bit of a double act moment now, as Tom suggested. I'm not sure if this is going to be more Morecambe and Wise or French and Saunders. You can debate that afterwards. But we'd like to give you a presentation introducing some of the general issues of the work of the European Agency and some of the context, which picks up on a number of points Renato highlighted. And then we'd like to move on to some of the issues which are coming out of our project involving 26 European member countries, which is specifically looking at issues to do with preparing all teachers to work in inclusive settings. I would like to say that as we're working with all countries, there are actually representatives from both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland involved in our projects, and they're in the audience. So if they want to correct us at any point or raise any points, we'd be grateful for that during the presentation. The agency is an organisation which was established by member countries and which is run on behalf of member countries by member countries. The slide here shows that we have our networks in 27 European countries, including Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And we have small offices in Denmark and Brussels, as well as staff dotted around Europe working on different projects. We're now into our 14th year of operations. We were started back in 1996 at an initiative of the Danish government when the European Union programme on Helios, which some of you may be aware of, came to an end. And at that time, it was decided that there needed to be some form of permanent platform for debates regarding special needs and inclusive education at the European level. And the agency was formed with a view to having a mission to actually be member countries' platform for collaboration, both for policymakers and practitioners in this area. Our activities really are to work towards the collection, analysis, and dissemination of different priority themes. And one of those is teacher education. How can all teachers be prepared to work in a much more changing, diverse, challenging arena? This issue was highlighted by all of our member countries as being a priority for them. This isn't something that just yourselves in the Republic and the north of Ireland are grappling with. We would say that from our work and from our work with experts in the 26 countries, that there are more similarities of issues being faced by teachers in classrooms and teacher educators than there are differences being faced by them. And we'd like to come on to some of those issues and challenges in a little while. Renato mentioned that the agency collaborates with a number of different European and international organisations. We work quite closely with the European institutions, organisations such as Eurydice and CEDEFOP. We also work with OECD and UNESCO and UNESCO International Bureau for Education. And those two organisations in particular have been quite influential in the thinking about teacher education for inclusion. The OECD work on teacher education for diversity again probably highlights more similarities in thinking about issues and strategies for addressing challenges than differences with the approach that we're taking. Even though the OECD work has a sort of working definition in its project, which is maybe more geared towards children from ethnic minority and immigrant backgrounds than the wider definition of diversity that we're using, the issues that OECD countries are identifying as being problems and possible strategies for addressing those problems in countries are really very similar to being faced across Europe at the moment. A bit of a boring slide now. The agency is funded by member countries and by the European Union, and you might think, yes, well, do we really want to know that? Well, the reason that I include this slide in presentations is as a way of explaining something to do with education policy generally at the European level. We're funded, as I say, from countries and from the Commission. The agency is run on the principle, using a wonderful European word, of a subsidiarity. And this basically means that the agency is totally independent from European directions. And the reason for that is that at the European policy level, education is not an area where there is any legislation written by European policymakers. Education is purely and simply the responsibility of member states. But increasingly, there are more and more agreements at the European level, particularly at the Council of Ministers level, regarding education. Over the last 10 years, since the EU Lisbon Objectives 2010, which were written back in the year 2000, there have been more and more initiatives at the Council of Ministers level, which have been policy agreements, directives, resolutions, which are influencing national level policy. And the reason I want to highlight this as a factor is that teacher education is one of the key areas where the European Council of Ministers, which are basically the gentlemen and representatives who are sitting at the table there, meeting in Brussels or Strasbourg and reaching agreements, there are more and more European level agreements which are filtering down into national level policy and legislation. And if there was one area where there are repeated council resolutions, teacher education is one of those, and I'd like to highlight some points coming from the ministers a little later on. The agency provides lots of information resources which are freely available and available in different languages. Also, I'm very pleased to say, recently we're providing things in Irish Gaelic. There are some little publicity materials outside if you're interested in looking at some of these, but we have a website where all of our information, including relating to teacher education, is presented. The agency works as far as possible to a very clear international policy context. We very obviously work to council resolutions, as I've just mentioned, the educational minister's guidance documents on education policy. We work to the UNESCO statements and declarations on education for all. And very importantly, we work within the framework now, which is outlined within the UN Convention from 2006 on the rights of people with disabilities. And particularly, and I know there's a session on this afternoon, we try to look at and explore how our member countries, the majority of whom have signed the UN Convention, if not ratified that in the optional protocol, are dealing with Article 24. And Article 24 is quite important as it stresses one of the points Renato raised. Inclusive education is not just about compulsory schooling. It's about educational opportunities at all levels. And when a country has signed, ratified the convention and the optional protocols, they're agreeing to Article 24. I'm not going to say too much more about that. I'm going to be very interested to join the workshop this afternoon, which is going to debate this. I would just like to say that sometimes Verity and I have a little bit of a difficulty in explaining being British, Welsh and English representatives, the UK's position on insisting on a reservation in signing and ratifying the convention when it came to Article 24, and maybe that might be an issue for debate this afternoon. Something that we would like to stress before we start talking about the teacher education agenda is that from the agency member country's position, inclusion is not something, as Renato very clearly pointed out, that is to do with piecemeal changes at different levels of a system. Inclusion has to be seen as a process which is very clearly based on systemic change. It has to be understood to concern a far wider range of children than just those who we might have traditionally thought of having special educational needs based on disabilities, learning difficulties, or different disadvantages. It has to be understood to involve a curriculum for all that considers academic and social learning, and that curriculum goals and implementation have to reflect this dual purpose. And picking up on a number of points that Renato raised, this means that consideration of inclusion and inclusive education means a move away from subject-orientated curricula to learning goals, competency-based curricula. And the final point to make is that from our country's perspective, inclusive education is a process. It's an ongoing process, and it's not a state which countries can say they've ever achieved. Now, as you'll be aware, the agency covers a number of different thematic topics, and we look at different priority areas, teacher education being one of those, that our member countries have suggested present issues for them or that they would like in some way to explore and get more information on. And every now and again we have the opportunity to look horizontally across these topics and try and identify what we see as being key principles emerging across different thematic areas in relation to inclusion. The most recent of these was completed last year, and these were some of the key points which were coming out as key messages from agency country members' work as being key principles for the promotion of quality in inclusive education. The first one of these was strategies, policies, different practices that will widen participation to increase educational opportunity for all learners. And then there were a number of factors regarding the promotion of inclusion which appear relevant across all countries' perspectives and which appear across different thematic areas, different levels of education. A number of these Renato has highlighted in different ways, but I think it's worth highlighting them again here for you. The first one of these being organisational culture and ethos. Are our educational organisations operating in a culture, an ethos of the promotion of inclusion? And educational leaders here are key players. What's the vision of head teachers and directors and principals and deans of faculties? And do they have personal visions which translate into policies and organisational culture for inclusion? What are the support structures that are apparent in different systems and different levels of organisations within the system of education in the country? Are there flexible resourcing systems in place? And do policies and legislation favour inclusion? And by favouring inclusion, the message from our countries here was that favouring inclusion is an active choice on the part of policymakers and legislators. It's not something which should be implicit and left as a developmental grassroots initiative. It's something which should have policymakers at national level taking a lead and outlining a vision and a pathway for. Possibly, though, the key issue which came up across all of the work that was looked at in this key principles analysis was the issue of how all teachers can be prepared to work in systems which try to work towards these principles of widening participation, working within positive cultures and ethos, and working within support structures which are designed to promote inclusive education. Now, across Europe, we can see that it doesn't matter what level or what state or what position on the journey towards inclusive education and developments towards inclusion countries are at, that there are a number of factors which can be seen to support inclusion in all country systems. A wider, flexible, more diverse continuum of provision of support is one of the key factors. Developing funding models which move away from resourcing individual children based on their label of having some form of special need or disability or difference to more flexible systems where schools on an individual level, consortia of schools, even regions can make decisions about flexible funding which meets the needs of groups of children as well as individuals, seems to be another area. The development of resource centres and resource systems for mainstream schools is another area. And very crucially here, we see in quite a number of countries the transformation of special schools and the special school sector into a resource for the mainstream sector as being a crucial factor. But there are still some challenges. The first of which is still the tension, the dichotomy between the need for our education systems to achieve higher academic achievements, the summative assessments, the high stakes assessments that Renato mentioned, versus meeting individual needs or special educational needs. The second challenge is the secondary education sector. In all countries, inclusive education appears to be something which is, let's put it simply, a little bit more manageable in a primary sector where maybe, as Renato pointed out, you have a model of one teacher, one class, and a different way of organising the curricula and the delivery of the curricula. It's very interesting to note that in countries that have traditionally had quite a high level of inclusive education and what that we might identify as having quite a high quality of education for children with different types of needs, particularly the Scandinavian countries, they operate a folk school system. A school system where in the main children go at 6 and they remain till 16. And there is no transition and there's no change in the basic model of schooling. Or if there is a change, it's a very gradual change. But one focus of a number of Scandinavian systems of education is the focus on the social aspect of schooling, the aspect of local schooling in the local community with that aspect of remaining in a community school, being with a young person throughout their compulsory schooling career. Across Europe, there are still 2% of children in separate, segregated educational settings. And this figure has remained relatively stable since 1999 to the present day. What we've actually seen in the last 2 years is a slight increase in that figure across Europe. Since 2008 to 2010, agency figures suggest that across Europe there's been a move, an increase of 0.2% of children who are in segregated settings as opposed to mainstream, fully inclusive settings. Now, this is something which is not just an issue at national level. This is an issue that the Council of Ministers, those people I referred to earlier, are taking incredibly seriously. For the European Union Programme for Education, ET 2020, Education and Training 2020, there are a number of objectives that have been set and benchmarks which will be worked towards. And one of the indicators for those objectives and benchmarks is the percentage of children in segregated settings across Europe and how that moves, hopefully decreases in a 10-year period. One of the other priorities that are being recognised by the Council of Ministers is preparing all teachers to work in inclusive settings. And I'd just like to highlight to you now a number of policy statements from the European Union, which sets in context teacher education for inclusion and some of the challenges which we're facing. In May of this year, under the Spanish presidency of the European Union, the Council conclusions from the Council of Ministers highlighted a number of key messages. The majority of these stress the importance of inclusive education systems as a major tool for promoting societal inclusion. It's quite interesting to reflect upon a little bit of a difference in wording and a difference in terminology and a difference in perceived thinking that's coming from the ministers, the European Union generally, the Commission and the European Parliament. The Lisbon 2010 objectives essentially had an implicit message that education was a tool for economic growth. Education and training were key factors in promoting economic development in European societies. But the messages which are now coming across after the 10-year period of the Lisbon objectives are much more in line with these council conclusions. ET 2020 uses these sorts of words, these sorts of messages towards inclusion, not integration, social cohesion and not economic growth. In 2007, the European Commission highlighted to the Council and to the Parliament their views on the need to take very, very seriously the changing demands on teachers in European classrooms. There are estimated to be around about 6.5 million teachers who are formally recognised as teachers across Europe. And the Commission's concern is that training systems that were in place, training systems that were being planned by countries, weren't taking enough notice of the change that was going on in society and was being reflected in classrooms. So this statement was one of the first to really start pushing the Council of Ministers towards the direction of saying, well, what can we do as a collective group of ministers to highlight these facts and then perhaps raise these issues within our systems? So a response to the Commission from the Council of Ministers, you can see here. They actually acknowledge the change in systems in society. They acknowledge the need to confront teachers' abilities to meet challenges, to meet social and cultural diversity in classrooms. They talk about the importance of promoting initial teacher education, early career support, continuous professional development, the acquisition of competencies to enable teachers to teach in heterogeneous classrooms. All of these political messages, and if you're interested in more of this information, then outside, some of you may have seen this small policy review document, but it's also available on our website to download. All of these messages emphasise issues to do with the fact that inclusive education has to be viewed as a shared responsibility. It can't be viewed as a marginal issue which only a few people deal with. Inclusion isn't something which can be either seen as a separatist agenda or be dealt with in a separatist way. Inclusive education is recognised at council level, at commission level, and at the agency member countries level as really being essential in promoting social equity, and has to be seen as a constituent element of lifelong learning. And underpinning all of that, preparing all teachers to work in inclusive settings, is really an essential prerequisite for inclusive education. The word responsibility here is really quite crucial, because one element of successful inclusive education is teachers taking responsibility for all learners within their classrooms. But if teachers are going to be supported to have those attitudes, to have those views, and to have the capacity to develop the knowledge and skills to be able to take responsibility for all learners, then it means that teacher educators must also take on a new set of responsibilities. And this set of responsibilities is for themselves to view themselves as educators of all teachers and educators of teachers for inclusive education. We can also see that there might be new responsibilities for higher education institutions, where they may need to review their course structures and review how they prioritise policies and visions for promoting inclusive education. But there are also responsibilities at the policy level and national policymakers, not just for education and inclusive education, but policymakers for teacher education need to see promotion of inclusive education as something they should consider. I'd like to just quickly highlight then a summary of what the EU agenda for teacher education seems to be. And there are 10 key points that the Council of Ministers have raised in terms of key aspects of their work that they see they need to address and that they need to share positive messages about. Now, I won't read these out. You have them in front of you and you're probably very familiar with a number of these. What I would say is that inclusive education is not separate to any one of those. It should be seen as an integral theme throughout each one of those policy agenda issues. What I'd like to come on to now is just a final message, and to say that I've had the double act half of really highlighting some key challenges which are faced by all teacher educators and teachers in Europe at the moment. But there are sources of information that maybe we need to actively look at in considering how these challenges can be met. One of these is the fact that there are many, many colleagues who work to prepare teachers to work in inclusive classrooms already. There are numerous examples of practice within your own countries and across Europe that we could point to where we could say this shows how things could develop. I think what we would say is that there's no country that has got everything right at the moment, though. There is not one country where all teachers are being prepared to work as inclusive teachers in inclusive classrooms. Practice in inclusive schools needs to be another source of inspiration in this area. Teacher educators maybe need to become more familiar with what happens in inclusive classrooms and what good inclusive teachers do. There are also inclusive higher education institutions, and in your own countries, there are again good examples of inclusive education going on in your institutions. And maybe, again, teacher educators need to be aware of how educators within higher education can be inclusive in their own practice. But as a final message from this half of the Double Act, I'd like to say that possibly some of the key sources of inspiration come from learners within inclusive settings themselves. And in 2007, the agency was privileged to organise a hearing of young people with disabilities and special needs within the Portuguese Parliament. And they had the opportunity to voice their views on what it meant to be educated in inclusive settings. And I'd just like to leave you with two messages. Oops, sorry, I'll just skip to this. The first is that inclusive education really is best if the conditions are right. And the young people that were involved in this particular event highlighted teachers and teachers' attitudes and skills has really been the crucial aspect for their personal success in inclusive settings. And then finally, the message that came across from these young people was that, yes, inclusive education is beneficial to us, but it's also beneficial to other people in the school setting. And I think that message is the final one that I'd like to leave you with and then hand over to Verity, that inclusive education is not just about the young people that we're identifying who have differences, who are, as Renato said, from the different groups. Quality inclusive education systems are about improved learning opportunities for all learners. And this is one key message for teacher educators, that in improving learning opportunities for a few young people, you are possibly impacting on the majority of the young people your student teachers come into contact with. And with that, I'd like to hand over to the second part of the Double Act, if that's okay, and leave you with my colleague, Verity. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Amanda, and thanks, everybody. As the second half of the Double Act, I'm not sure whether I should do a song and dance or something, but it might be more interesting for you, but I'm going to stick with the good old PowerPoint presentation. And I'm going to move on to the detail of the project and more about the issues and challenges that has raised for us and that we are currently trying to tackle. As Amanda said, our projects come from decisions made by the member countries, and teacher education was a top priority. We've got 55 experts from 26 countries taking part in the activities, and they're, we think, a very strong combination of special needs educators, specialist teacher educators, policy makers, mainstream teacher educators and policy makers. So we actually have a good mix, and I think reflecting the importance or the growing importance of this area of work, we're also joined by representatives of OECD and UNESCO IBE as participant observers, and the European Commission are also involved. Oh, sorry. So our intentions in the project: to build on what's already developing in some countries. Obviously, we've got a really rich source of information across our member countries. We're identifying project activities and outputs that have a maximum impact in countries and international level debate. And looking at the essential question, as Tom outlined earlier, how mainstream teachers are prepared via their initial training to be inclusive. And very importantly, I think, because we're working across so many different countries, different contexts, we recognise that countries are at different starting points and have different histories, particularly in terms of inclusion and teacher education. And we need to see that as a strength. We recognise that no countries have all the answers. Amanda said inclusion is a process, not a state, and a lot of countries are working towards inclusion and have a lot to offer in the debate. And we have some very strong examples of practice, but we learn from diversity, and that's a principle for the project and, we would say, an aim for inclusive education. The project actually has three main activity tracks. The first one is international policy and research literature. Amanda talked about the policy review, which is international documents and reports and projects. And the second one is an international literature review. There are a few copies outside, but it's also available on the agency website. And that is a review of worldwide literature after the year 2000. And again, I think a strength of that is that we actually had contributions from the experts taking part in the projects of literature that was generated in languages other than English, which I think adds a strength to the literature review. We've also collected country information. So every country, their country teams of experts and policymakers have put together and provided us with a report on the current picture of teacher education in the country. And we are also working towards developing a profile of inclusive teachers. So we're looking at policy and practice across all the countries in teacher education. So our country reports collect information on the project question and use a common format. So by the end of the year, we hope to have all the reports from the various countries on a database, which will make it possible for you to search for information on particular questions across all of the project countries. We were conscious that there was a lot of information already in the Eurydice reports and the Eurobased country reports, so we've built on those without repeating information. And between the information from all the country reports will be pulled together to provide a synthesis report and also a bridging document which will highlight the key issues and point to evidence that has come to support those various issues from country reports and from the literature reviews and also the other aspects of the project and the country visits. So I'm going to go on to some of the underpinning principles and then to some of the emerging recommendations of the project. The timescale of the project is actually finishing in spring 2012, so they are interim findings and recommendations, sort of draft form. But the underpinning principles, that the reform of teacher education must be part of a wider societal reform to support inclusion and requires collaboration between policymakers to ensure a holistic approach. And we've heard a lot from Renato this morning and from Amanda about the need for everybody to work together and for it to be a whole approach to societal reform. There was some work by the Council of Europe on teaching for sociocultural diversity in 2009, and that talked about the process of inclusion transforming communities and schools to become diversity sensitive rather than adding things onto existing structures. And there's a quote there that equity must be at the centre of general policy decisions, not limited to peripheral policies, which are designed then to correct the effects of general policies that haven't led to equity or justice. So, you know, there's a temptation to have bolt-on things. If we don't look at fundamental change, we're forever bolting on and sort of playing catch-up to try and make things more inclusive. So the emerging recommendations. As Amanda said, we've used really the UNESCO broader definition of inclusion, but it's evident from the country reports there's a lot of variety across countries arising from differences in legislation, different historic and political contexts. We had a recent project meeting in Zurich at the end of September, where Tony Booth was a keynote speaker, and he said inclusion is a principled approach to the development of education and society. A principled approach to the development of education and society. And I think that gives us a strong steer for that sort of change that we're looking to move towards. Some countries are moving away from using inclusion as a term, terms like school for all, attention to diversity, being diversity sensitive, are increasingly being introduced. But what's fundamental is clarity about the different perspectives in context, so that students, teachers, teacher educators, everyone can make informed choices, whether we're talking about special educational needs, disability, we're talking about wider groups of learners that we can refer to as vulnerable or marginalised, or are we talking about increasing participation and reducing exclusion for all learners? And I think that's what we're talking about. And learners includes adults in the community, adults in the school are learners and are in that inclusive community. If we don't talk about that broader definition, how can we expect teachers to take responsibility for all learners that they meet in their classes and provide relevant outcomes for all? As Renato talked about, the relevant curriculum, they've got to have that belief that they're responsible for everybody and see themselves as teachers of children, not just deliverers of curriculum content, whether it's from the books that Renato referred to. They need to be more dynamic in meeting learners' needs. The report from Spain pointed out that many courses within teacher education are linked to the evolution of special needs education and the integration of learners with special educational needs rather than tackling diversity issues more broadly. And that's a key issue that a lot of countries are tackling at the moment. So this reform has got to include clarification of the terminology around inclusion and around diversity, and we feel move away from categorising and labelling of children and young people, and that in turn encourages provision which is separate from mainstream. And we also, this also suggests that inclusion and diversity issues need to be infused across teacher education courses. Involvement in one or two courses on special education inclusion may reinforce a sense of separation. And Florian and Rouse have pointed out in the literature that modules or units tend to reinforce this sense of separation and lead students to believe that only those who have taken these particular specialist courses can teach learners from those particular groups. So if the curriculum is a resource, a flexible, dynamic resource to support learning, increasing flexibility is needed in initial teacher education, parallel to schools, not delivering a set content but facilitating learning through varied experiences to counter one of the most powerful influences that emerges in the literature, which is our own experience of education. And if we haven't been educated in those inclusive settings, sometimes it's quite hard to actually visualise what that looks like. But again, diverse experiences to try and build on that. Roger Slee suggests critical thinking about identity and difference, privilege and disadvantage, inclusion and exclusion as fundamental things in teacher education. And he makes reference to a system that in some areas, I think particularly in the UK, are tightly bound by targets. And we talked about high stakes assessment and so on. But Slee suggests thinking about arches as well as targets. And I think that, again, gives a good image of broadening the agenda. So we're back to one of the key points that's emerging. All teachers must feel capable of teaching all learners. They must know how and when to use a range of practices and become informed users of research and advice, able to make decisions informed by theory and research, feedback and classroom evidence. So to ensure that, we need to focus on the things that learners have in common, less on their differences. And there is fundamental things like social emotional factors in learning, the need to be motivated by seeing learning as relevant, need for support at times of stress, and of course shared values we've referred to before. And teachers need to move from planning for a majority and then considering additional needs to planning using a universal design, providing options for learners with different needs. And a quote here, I think it's Libby Purvis on Radio 4 that referred to our children as kaleidoscopes and not clones. So it's about meeting that diverse mixture of needs. So good practice is essentially the same for all learners, but requires innovative thinking and high expectations to increase learning capacity and the use of interactive approaches to involve learners more effectively. In the literature review, there's reference to a lot of research which highlights the importance of appropriate attitudes and values to support inclusive practice and effective relationships. And again, Rouse talks about knowing, doing and believing, and the work of Shulman, who talks about the apprenticeship of the head, the hand and the heart, and the importance, again, of those values and the fundamental belief in being able to teach and to meet the needs of all learners. It's less clear from the literature how these beliefs and attitudes are actually developed, but certainly there's suggestions which include direct interaction and practical experience with people with diverse needs. But again, time, and it needs to be mediated, time for interaction, time for discussion, and time for reflection. Teaching practice is obviously a key element in the preparation of teachers. Obviously, it needs to be carefully planned and supported by intellectual analysis, and there's a lot of reference to a theory-practice gap. The importance of research skills and the use of research findings in practice, skills in observation and assessment, classroom management, behaviour management, skills in collaboration, and development of active and learner-centred pedagogy are all key features that emerge both from the literature and from our country reports and our discussions with experts. Student teachers need to be placed in inclusive settings, which is not that easy to manage in many countries. So there's a range of different approaches and different developments trying to provide those experiences for teachers, either within college or within communities, to supplement teaching practice and to make sure that students have a range of experiences with diverse learners to increase, increase their experience, and also that they are appropriately supervised by mentors, supervising teachers, who again have the appropriate attitudes and values that support inclusion. This highlights the need for closer collaboration between training institutions and schools. And this is something we're looking at. And Finland in particular has an interesting model, which is teacher demonstration schools, where teacher educators are actually working in schools alongside students. And that's something we will be looking at more in the spring. And other countries too are developing roles of teachers in school and looking at the role of school personnel and school leaders in the development of teachers. We're looking in this project particularly at mainstream teacher, initial teacher education, but obviously, we're constantly reminded of this, that teacher education is a continuum, and we need to bear that in mind. And really, this project is focusing on the initial phase because of manageability, but we need to bear in mind that teachers are lifelong learners. So they go from their initial training to induction, and further professional learning opportunities need to be developed for students, but also for teacher educators, particularly if they haven't had much experience of diversity. And I talked before about the importance of our own experience of education and models of education and that impact on passing on messages to students and others. So developing teacher educators so that they can model reflective and inclusive practice, and that the change process in teacher education should be informed by the experiences of early career teachers. And another finding that's emerging from the project is there doesn't seem to be a lot of systematic follow-up of new teachers and using that information to feedback and impact on teacher education courses. There is some work currently going on in a couple of countries that we will be looking at, but at the moment that seems to be an area for development. So the importance of maintaining the status of teachers with academic rigour and a continuum of professional development to ensure that they are lifelong learners and that they can think through, adapt, apply research findings and act as facilitators of learning for all. The McKinsey report referred to the quality of an education system that cannot exceed the quality of its teachers. So there's also a need to address teacher recruitment to get the best graduates and get key people to become teachers and to continue developing them into the profession. And the research also shows the need for statements or competencies for teachers to support a shared understanding of quality teaching. The profile of an inclusive teacher may include, and these are just some thoughts from the literature, subject knowledge, knowledge of child, adolescent development, pedagogical skills, skills of collaboration, and a will to continue professional development. Within our countries, and emerging from the country reports, approximately half of the countries have or are currently developing some form of competencies. Several more countries have standards. And there's a variety of models. Some are actually set in legislation. Some countries are required to have competencies, but their development and the detail is at the discretion of individual colleges and universities. And within that, a number have content relating to inclusion or diversity, but this is often described by country colleagues as being ad hoc, with separate units or modules on special education, cultural diversity, and so on. And many such units form a very small percentage of initial teacher education courses. So most countries recognise that this is an area for development, but they're faced with the difficult task of trying to square the circle regarding ensuring appropriate coverage of diversity issues, but not separating content out, trying to infuse it, but maintaining the importance of a lot of these key issues. Teacher competencies, as I said, provide a shared understanding of quality, inclusive teaching. Competencies represent a dynamic combination of knowledge, understanding, skills and abilities which are obtained or developed during the process of learning by the student. I think we see competencies as something that's developed over a longer period of time and certainly would go on developing throughout a teacher's career. Whereas maybe standards and learning outcomes are something that's assessed by summative assessment at the end of a course. And we've described in our paper on the profile, competencies are statements describing teacher actions that can be demonstrated, providing evidence that teachers hold certain beliefs and have gained certain knowledge, understanding, and skills and abilities. For teachers, there's clearly a need to include, in addition to academic and interpersonal competencies, knowledge and skills needed for responsive pedagogy, an increasingly personalised and learner-centred system. And competencies require different forms of evidence, and some countries are developing the use of portfolios, which actually require collaboration and self-reflection. So a couple of examples from the countries. In Austria, colleagues have referred to competencies for an ever-changing environment, which I think is fairly key because the current context in education requires teachers to cope well with change and with new challenges. And a small study in Flemish community within Belgium has found that special needs expertise is not as important as some of the general competencies and certainly attitudes for teacher Teaching for Inclusion. So as I said, one of the outputs of the project is to develop a profile of inclusive teachers. And this slide shows some of the main considerations. As well as research and the literature review, we had 5 country study visits in the spring of 2010 to Northern Ireland, to Portugal, to Sweden, to the Netherlands and to Hungary. And each visit included a group of experts and gave opportunities not only for networking and discussion about different country contexts, but to look at these particular questions about the development of a profile. So we're looking at attitudes, knowledge and skills. What initial education do teachers need to develop those? And what are the implications for all teachers, educators? And then looking at the bigger picture, what systemic changes are needed to allow them to be implemented? And what policy frameworks needed to allow all this to happen? So it's a large agenda, I think, that we're trying to tackle between now and spring 2012. So in terms of future activities, all the country reports will be uploaded to our website and database. We'll be writing a summary report, a synthesis of all the country information. We're planning another series of country-based meetings next spring to look specifically at the validation of the profile, to discuss the profile in more detail, to look at the competencies, to look at the implications for teacher education, and to agree dissemination strategies. And then we'll have an endpoint international conference in spring 2012 to launch the project outputs and the profile. And then we'll be translating and printing all the materials into our member country languages. So all the information about the project is on our website. Contact details are there, so feel free to contact us for more information. And there's some shots of our website, the Teacher Education for Inclusion project web area, which again outlines information about the project and will give you access to country reports, database and so on. And also the international policy statements and the research literature review. And that's the review which you can download from the website. So there are some copies outside, but we didn't bring enough for everybody. So if you can download from the website. And also outside there's some information about our other project we're doing with UNESCO, Inclusive Education in Action. And one of the flyers from that project actually gives you information about a conference on social inclusion that was held in Madrid, which was quite influential in informing the one of the Council of Ministers' papers that Amanda referred to. So I think we've got some time for questions now and hopefully some discussion about these issues. So thank you.